It's time for Golf DMV, highlighting golf in D.C., Maryland, Virginia, and anywhere else they travel. If you love golf and like to laugh, Golf DMV is your place. This ain't your stuffy, snobby, boring golf show. It's Golf DMV.
All right, it's the official Pinehurst 2021 preview show of Golf DMV. We're coming up to Pinehurst. Pinehurst liked a tweet of mine and retweeted it. We'll have more on that later. Yeah, in this show, so I'm kind of you know, fanboying over that, right? Also, Father's Day was yesterday, because today is Monday when we're recording the show. Sunday was Father's Day. We'll talk about Father's Day rounds at Chaladon and Waverly. I have changed my mind. I'm not going to quit golf, and I didn't have to look at any old golf tech lessons from John Ross to regain my sanity. So we'll talk about that round coming up. But first, the U.S. Open almost in, you know, poetic justice. John Rahm, 2 weeks after catching the Rona and not being able to finish the tournament at Jack's Place, the Memorial, the last we saw, he had his head in his hands, yep. You know, seeming as if he was about to start weeping and sobbing because he was told, you cannot play the fourth and final round. You've tested positive for COVID-19. And this 1.7 that you were cruising to, this 1.7 million, although he already has over $20 million in earnings in his young life, he's only 26 and he already has won $24 million. And so he's trying to keep up with his age, I guess. So that 1.7 isn't going to mean a whole lot. But, you know, tell that to someone who had it in the hands. Anyway, yeah. He ends up not winning. But 2 weeks later, comes to the U.S. Open. And in real dramatic fashion, I feel like the final round, pretty dramatic. Want to know, before we jump into, like, just what we noticed about the tournament, do you feel like, whether it's Bryson DeChambeau, whether it's Roy, but more so Louis Oosthuizen, that they lost it? Or do you feel like John Rahm won it? I feel like Rahm won it because he birdied 17 and 18. Right. He put the number up. He's like, okay, bam, bam, birdie, birdie. I'm done. Now y'all have at it. You know what I mean? And so I feel like, although we saw some folks with some impressive numbers coming, you know, that leaderboard was stacked going into the final round, you know, and DeChambeau, you know, he blew up. Yeah. Louis Oosthuizen, you know, choked, I guess you could say choked, you know, I mean, this is coming from somebody who's just 15, 17, 18 yeah. handicap. And so, you know, measure my comments with understanding that I'm trash. But I feel like Rahm won it. I mean, I don't even blame anybody for losing that one. He went out there, he birdied the last two and said, okay, now you've got to play some golf. And nobody, and Louis couldn't catch him.
Yeah. Okay. All right, cool. So I'm going to go because LB's just looking. So,
he didn't throw. He's supposed to throw it to somebody.
I am the media professional. I am supposed on. To say, after, Earn, after you all, go, and then
LB. No, yeah. LB's been going. Be doing this for 4 years. It's not supposed to be any quote unquote dead air. LB, like, I wonder if you had not said anything, Claude, how long we all would have just sat there until you.
Awkward silence.
No, to your point, to answer your question, Claude. Rahm definitely won it. Louis. It feels tough to come out, you know, and say, he choked it away or anything like that. It definitely fumbled the bag a little bit because you had an opportunity, but I don't even want to say he choked it away because he was kind of in the mix. He was hovering down there. I think coming into Friday, Saturday or whatever, you know, in the top 20 or whatever, but no, I don't think anybody necessarily had him, coming this close to winning, like this being
right,
the most.
Yeah.
I mean, some people picked him to win, but you know what I mean? I think people were looking at like Hindley and some of these other guys. And I wanted Brooks to make a move, but no, Rahm 100% won it. Cause like you said, he put the number up. To me, a choke would be, Louis got it. Everyone's in the clubhouse and he's coming in and then fumble.
Okay,
so,
you
know what I mean? Like where he had the lead, he had it and he blew
absolutely.
It. Exactly. No, Rahm took it, you know, made those two crucial putts. Coming down the stretch, I was right there with him, fist pumping and everything. Mm-hmm. It was dope. Once we get LB's thoughts on this, I'll come back around. I have a thought of basically how I felt after watching Rahm win. But he definitely won. Louis, and everybody take it easy on Louis because right now everybody's doing the whole sports radio, you know, like you said, they're putting choke on him, can't finish, all this other stuff. I was like, man, look.
And he's won a major, by the way.
Yeah, he's won a major. Don't forget. Okay.
That's one more than Ricky.
Well, exactly. So he's won a major before, and he's come.
And one more than Rahm before Rahm won one.
Exactly. You know? He had a major, Rahm didn't have one. And him coming, you know, T2 and all these other ones in golf, you would say you're doing, just keep it up. Just keep it up. You're gonna crack. You know what I'm saying? You're gonna break through on one of these. So I'm not gonna apply, like you said, Claude. You know, 14 handicap, 15, whatever. I'm not gonna apply choker or anything like that to Louis. I'm sure he's blown. And they said in the commentary, last thing I'll say, they said in the commentary that he was telling other, I think it was Retief Goosen or some other South African prominent golfers, that he's aware of, you know, him, you know, being a bridesmaid, never the bride type situation, always coming in second, and that he wants to win again on American soil because he hadn't won since he won the major. So, so I'm not worried about him. He'll be fine. But this was a great weekend for Rahm. I think we should just celebrate Rahm's victory.
Okay, so I'm glad Rahm won. Of the people that were left after all the carnage took place, I was pulling for Rahm as well.
Yeah,
I do believe Louis in some. Choker may be a too strong a word, but I think he did have the lead at one point.
Well, so if I understand, he had the lead. Rahm tied him.
Yep,
and then he fell back.
That's where he met. It was 17 where he bogeyed, right? When he said when he bogeyed on 17, and that was like at that point it was over because then you got an eagle 18, and he ain't doing that,
right?
But he had eagled it one of the other rounds. Right. He had done it before, so it wasn't like he could not do it. So here's my question on Louis.
Okay.
I think that Louis got up there after he sent it off out of bounds. I mean, I think I text y'all, he's done. I think I text you actually before that on 17 when he when he screwed up. I was like, oh, he's done.
Yeah.
But on 18, when you have an opportunity, you got an eagle get an eagle to tie at that point, I think, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, he had to get an eagle to tie to send it overtime to extra holes. And he didn't go for it. Yes, he was in a rough, and it probably wasn't the best scenario to try and go for it in two. But I wonder if Louis thought about it this way. I can go up here. I can try and go for the get on in two. But if I miss and go in that water, instead of coming in second place now, I'm coming in third, tied for third, or maybe even fourth place.
Yep.
And I have the numbers right here. The difference between second place and third place is $520,000.
Not a small amount of money.
No. Right. Now, I've listened to other people today, other, you know, commentators and stuff talking about it, and they say that they were saying that athletes at this stage of their lives, of their careers, the money is not important to them because they're making money hand over fist. They want the win.
True.
You know what I mean? So it's not about they think, well, if I do this, I'm gonna lose this. I would be, hey, I'm gonna go take the easy route and take this second place at a 1.3 million as opposed to trying to get the win for the 2.5. When if I screw up, I'm gonna get back down here to third or fourth place for $500,000. So I could lose easily $1 million by going for it.
Right, but you're saying Louis is basically he would count as one of these athletes who's made enough money on tour. He's concerned about his legacy and winning.
He should be. That's in my opinion. He should be.
And that's a good point, LB, because I feel like when that ball was in the rough, and this is just totally reading his body language, it seemed like to me he conceded.
Yeah,
when he decided not to go for it, because you could see that. I mean, he hits the shot, he puts it back in the fairway. You know, and now he's just chipping distance away, a pitching distance away. Mm-hmm. And you could just see how he shrugged his shoulder. Like that shot was my concession. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to win this. I'm trying to secure a second. And just from, you know, there wasn't even an approach to the third shot. Like, I've got to hold this. You know what I mean? There was no aggression. There was not. It was just, you know,
just playing golf at this point.
Exactly. At that point, I mean, once he hit it and him and his caddy started moving, and it was almost like his caddy, it felt like feel like he was consoling him. Like, you did the right thing. Let's go get this
second place.
That's what it felt like. That is what it felt like. That was very observant, LB. I kind of felt that same way. Meanwhile, as Louis Oosthuizen is trying to figure out what he's going to do, whether as far as this tournament goes, and while he's bogeying and then hitting the tee shot off into the rough, Phil Mickelson is sitting at the driving range talking to John Rahm's wife while she holds the baby while Rahm is warming up in case he has a playoff round. And this is, again, reasons why we love Phil Mickelson, you know, because now apparently, you know, he, him and Rahm are close, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and,
Arizona, and, the Arizona, yeah, contingency.
You know, the Arizona contingency. Mm-hmm. And so he kind of, you know, almost, I guess, you know, I don't know if it's like a mentor kind of relationship or whatever, but he's taking the light. Yeah. Into him, you know what I mean?
He's the godfather.
So. Exactly. And so you sit there and you're watching and Phil's just sitting there with his wife and the baby's there. And it's like, and we just texting like, there's Phil. Just
with joggers
out.
On. Don't forget with the joggers.
With the joggers on. Yes, my man. With the joggers on. Oh, just man. Hanging out. And it's a typical Phil thing. He's not like Sergio. Who Sergio was with? I'm trying to remember the other golfer.
Yeah, it was.
He was with
Niemeyer?
No, it was.
Joaquin Neiman.
Neiman.
With him and his wife sitting mm-hmm. down eating
chicken
hot dogs.
Fingers and stuff. You
know? like he's at you know Meadwood. You know, yeah, like he's at Chuck E. Cheese. And it's like, you know, who ordered the chicken fingers? Like, why are you like he should be warming up and getting ready for this playoff? Yeah. Not when you got Sergio. But no, feels like I'll take care of the wife. I'll keep her company. And apparently there was some video going around. I think it was Kara Dixon who reports for the Golf Channel. She had a little video on Twitter of Phil walking down the grandstand with the wife behind him and an extra chair, you know, and she sits down and he puts the chair down, you know, just being real hospitable. You know what I mean?
Right.
Just Phil being a charmer, you know?
Right.
And so I thought that was actually pretty interesting to see, and the awkwardness of the post show interview where they were waiting for the flyover to come that was like
was
2 minutes late.
Yeah. Yeah.
2 minutes late. Like, oh my God, here we go. So yeah, I don't know, man. I enjoyed it. There was some back and forth about with Glenn on text about Torrey Pines being a being you know worthy of hosting a US Open.
Yeah.
To me, you know, he was wondering what was the beauty about it. I just look to me fairways are super narrow. When the rough is out like that, and those greens are rolling, it's hard to play. It wasn't, and I'll say this because Glenn did mention, you know, he hadn't been watching golf for a long time. There had been a stretch of years where the U.S. Open and the USGA were taking a lot of criticism for making the course too tough.
Too
you know what I mean?
Right. Trying to make it
par. Yeah, I'm trying to remember which course. It was.
The big one was in San Francisco. If it wasn't, I think it was the Olympic Club. It was
Olympic,
in San Fran.
Yeah. Yeah, and the one they did up in didn't they do the one up in New? Did they do Bethpage Black? Didn't they trick that out too?
Yeah, rough go
really long and all that stuff.
And there was
the greens were ridiculous.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And one where they made the fairways super fast, and the greens were super fast. You couldn't even land the ball on the green; it was going to roll off.
Mm-hmm.
which we shall be playing coming up this Friday. And there was one where that everything was running fast and they tried overnight to just, they like almost for 12 straight hours, watered the fairways in the green to try to slow them down. and so this, you know, and Torrey Pines has history, you know what I mean? And the fact that it's a muni. And so, but no, I feel like he had a good point that, I mean, when you, and again, coming from, again, I shot 106 at Maryland National. So it's not, I mean, but when you look at it, it doesn't seem to be a super challenging course. Just it seems to be pretty straightforward what it is. You know what I mean? Right. And I've never played it, but hopefully one day we can get out there and play.
Right. And I was thinking about getting him to record his take for the show just so we could have it in his own words. I'm going to try to – I think his biggest thing was he was comparing it – for those listening in terms of if you're like, oh, you know, hot take, Torrey Pines, is it a U.S. Open-worthy course? He was basically, I think, comparing it to the other courses that he's seen since he's been watching golf in the U.S. Open or heard about. And then, you know, Claude and I could have sort of immediately jumped on the other side, like, oh, you know, what are you doing here?
Yeah, slow down, Sparky.
But when I compared it to the other course, like as was his original thought, the other courses that the U.S. Open had in the past, I could kind of see where I'm like, okay, I kind of see what you mean. Like, particularly even if you just look at Cuba Island, just, you know, what we just had at the PGA Championship, where there's a lot of more forced shot making there as opposed to somewhere like Torrey or, you know, I don't know if Pebble's a great example, but, you know, some of the, even Wingfoot actually. So Wingfoot though got some of this too from, if you remember when we had the Boss Golf song where he said like a section of the holes going, I think out, maybe the front nine, I can't remember front nine, back nine are kind of ho-hum, kind of regular.
Yeah.
And he's going to add length and grow out the rough and everything else. So, but, Didn't they
play at Erin Hills not too long ago too?
They did, exactly.
I think that was one of the ones that everyone was like, oh, this is not a fair test.
This is unreasonable. Now, having said all that, you know, you know, I after watching Sunday, I was like, well, maybe you don't need it to be. You just need it to be pro length and then have the fairways appropriately narrow and the greens mm-hmm. fast. And that's it. And the pressure alone will destroy. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, you saw that leaderboard on Sunday. All the carnage yeah. just back yeah. and forth and up and down. Cat, you know, the only one who didn't seem to care was my guy, Dustin. Dustin was in the mix for a minute, and then he wasn't. And you know what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was surprised he made the cut, because at one point, I didn't think he was making the cut.
So was he. The best thing about watching Dustin, though, man, is like when I watch, they announced him, when he comes out, you know, everybody else, something about like they have a gleam in their eye, you know, they wave and they do the thing. Mm-hmm. Dustin's wave is like, I feel like somebody told him, it's like, hey, this is how you interact with people when they say your thing. It's the same every time. Like when he came up to the crowd, it was just this sort of like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Half-assed.
Yeah. Yeah, it just makes me mad. Yeah.
And not even dismissive.
Just not dismissive, just like
a DJ
just,
thing.
Just what
like
I'm supposed
thing.
To do.
Yeah,
like
everybody.
Yeah. Like
a robot. And another course, though, I mean, don't forget, we just got finished watching the LPGA at the Olympic Club.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, and that's a brutal
That's a good
spot.
Example of
that's a brutal spot.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Every shot is a test or whatever. But again, the pressure of Sunday wasn't, I think that was one of my, I had two takeaways. Which I guess I'll just get to now. One was watching that again, just like everybody, you know, Bryson, even at the end, just falling apart. Brooks missing opportunity. You know, some guys look worse than others. And then who was that LB that we said was tied for 50th? Not Hayden. I can't remember his last name. The gentleman came in with the lead and then was all.
Oh, disappeared. Yeah. Bland. Yeah. Was it Bland?
Was it Bland? Like, yeah. I think it was Bland. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Russell yeah. Henley. And Henley.
Oh, and Henley. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just gone. Wiped out. Doing fine. Yep. Played the course for 3 days. Fine. Mm-hmm. Sunday comes up. You put that pressure on them. Diamonds mm-hmm. or charcoal or whatever. However the saying goes. Bust a pipe or make diamonds. With, you know, I should know. Yeah. I'm in culture. Anyway, you know.
But, we know what you're trying to say.
But the other major shot, the thing I took away the most was, I think of all the U.S. Opens we've had or majors we've had recently, I would say going back to Tiger winning 2019, I don't think we've had a winner as unanimously like celebrated as Rom, right? The feeling after this one, I didn't see any like, you know, Morikawa wins. It's kind of not a muted response, but just kind of like, oh, okay, cool. This guy, you know, a new guy, but whatever. Mm-hmm. Rom wins, it seems like. Everybody, I can't find a person who's just like, you know, bleep this guy. I don't like this guy.
Right. No. And I think a lot of that.
He's like the people's champ. He's like,
well,
the champ.
I don't know. I think a lot of that, what plays into that is the memorial and the COVID.
That helps.
Absolutely. That helps. Absolutely yeah. helps, especially yeah. under the circumstances where he, you know, had to leave. I've never had anything against Rom. I mean, I call him Blockhead all the time, but he's cool with me.
Yeah. But it has nothing to do with like, him as a person, he has a block.
He's a blockhead.
Yeah, he seems like a real bro. Like I saw, I didn't realize that, you know, how many like, so our friend of the show, I think, APGA player Joe Hooks, put up in his Instagram stories, a bunch of photos of him and Rom hanging out, playing golf together in Florida.
Oh, really?
Like, yes, exactly. Yeah, okay. Different events and stuff like that. So he does give off people's champ vibes, and that's a real good point you made, though, because I do think like, for a lot of reasons I won't get into, after that happened, all sorts of people came to his
defense and were like, like, yeah, man, this is wrong. Y'all did him wrong. Basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And he was real graceful about it too, though. In his, you know, he wasn't like, see, F you. He was like, nope, this was the rules. This is what happened.
Right. He talked about the karma. You know, he said, I believe in karma. So
I knew something good was going to come my way. Yeah. He was right. Yeah.
He said, I just wanted to keep it positive, not get too negative, just stay positive.
Yeah. You know, and like the two putts he hit were, I mean, you got like,
they were clutch.
You got to give him credit for them putts.
You can't deny
him. Nobody else was making those putts. No. Was it left or right or whatever? Yeah. So,
exactly. So I'm happy for him. I'm happy that golf got like a universally celebrated winner. There's no controversy. There's no like, you know, with the U.S. Women's Open where it's like, oh, please, Lexi. And then wins. And people are like, oh, I guess. Right. So none of that. Yeah. This was awesome for him. And I think it's good for golf. Also.
By the way, did y'all see the video of the young lady who won the U.S. Women's Open? I forget her name. Yeah. She's like in the merch store. With the trophy in one hand, and she's looking at a tie-dye shirt in the next, and she's by herself, just shopping. She's shopping for merch, and it's like you have the trophy in your hand. You don't need any merch,
right? She's like, you got the ultimate merchandise here.
She's like, well, while I'm here, I might as well. But it reminds me of that kind of low key. You know, this is low key way about some people that's real charming. The fact that she just this, I mean, almost dragging the trophy on the floor. It's just in one hand, hanging. And she's looking at t-shirts and like just this weird tie-dye looking shirt, just looking around the pro shop. Like she's about to buy something. Like, did you win?
Remember the Olympic Club.
Well, that's the thing. Like, did you get a check, the trophy, and shop credit? Like, is that what you got?
Right.
Exactly. And so now
I gotta use these up.
You got to find a way to spend $85 in shop credit at Olympic Club before you go home. Like, and so she's looking around for something to buy. And
also, so, inevitably, I'm sorry, Clark, go ahead.
No, you're right. Go ahead. You good.
No, I was going to say, inevitably, too, there'll be, this is the way it goes. Like, she'll do this, and everybody likes the story. And then there's that jerk shopkeeper who actually makes her pay for the, because you know, when she goes up there, you're not supposed to, if you're running that shop.
Right. Like, she don't pay for anything. Take whatever you want.
Yeah. Hey, I just want to get this shirt or whatever. I didn't know if we could. Yeah, that's going to be $85. So.
Right. Hey, if you're gonna touch that, you gotta buy it. If you touch that or break it, you buy it. It's like right. Give her a loan.
And give her whatever she wants out of the pro shop. Yeah.
It's definitely the pro shop guy who's in there and he's keeping keeping a close eye on her. He don't care about that trophy.
He might stick something in that trophy and sneak it out.
Right. Yeah, please leave your bags in that trophy at the door. We don't want you walking around here to steal anything. Then there was I believe it was Hideki Matsuyama after winning the Masters. Somebody saw him at the airport with earbuds in, sitting on the floor, and the green jacket like draped around him like a towel. And he's just sitting there listening to music, and he's just sitting on the floor waiting for his commercial flight. It's just something about that kind of everyday person thing that's just funny. Like, I don't even know why looking at her drag the trophy around and throw shot was funny. It's just weird. It's just, you know, I don't, but anyway.
Yeah.
That was pretty funny. So we've got Manny Millions for the U.S. Open.
Yeah. So we had a tie this week.
Real quick, want to just break that down, Claude? Because I feel like we were doing an update on the listener count offline, and maybe we got some new people who don't know what the Manny Millions is.
Good point. So here's what the Manny Millions is, something we started a few years ago. So basically, I have a son. His name is Manny. He loves to play golf, but I don't want to be one of those parents who put all this pressure on their kids, and then they, you know, next thing you know, they're on, TV One or some kind of, you know, behind-the-scenes story of how this child prodigy, you know, turned to drugs and alcohol.
I hate my dad.
And prostitution and stuff. And so it's like, I don't want to do that to him.
Manny, so, male prostitute.
Exactly. And so I don't want that to be his story. And so, like, I don't want to put a lot of pressure on him. So my thing is, hey, play golf if you want to. And so we're thinking, okay, if he were to be a pro golfer and make it on tour, but never win, just make a cut and finish last place, how much money can he make? And so we track each tournament, how much the last place person who makes a cut makes. 2 years ago, we calculated a little bit over $600,000. And that's not a bad.
About 680, I think it was.
Not a bad limit.
Not a bad number.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So here we go. So this week's Manny Millions, we had a tie with Fabian Gomez and Jimmy Walker. I'm not doing Jimmy Walker because we've had him on before.
And he's got to be in like the 30s or 40s. Well, probably the 20th millions.
But we're not doing
enough. Yeah. Jimmy Walker, speaking of Manny, we saw him playing and he's teeing off at one of the, might have been at Congressional. And he hooks the ball right into the trees and he slams his driver down. He's like, I'm tired of this. Literally, the next time Manny and I go to the driving range, Manny hits a ball and it goes straight, but he does the Jimmy Walker. He slams the thing that I'm tired. It's like, why are you doing that? Well, because Jimmy Walker did it. And after that round, we were headed back to the bus. And as we're walking by, it's me, it's Sierra, my wife, and it's Manny. And just over some hill comes this guy, and it's Jimmy Walker. And he's headed to the driving range. They're like, whoa, Jimmy, what's going on? He said, man, I'm going to the range. I got to figure something out. And so after his round, and we're leaving to go home, and no security, no ropes or nothing. We're just walking out, and then here he comes over a hill. And it just made me, like we say this all the time, golf is hard. And sometimes these dudes are just like us. After his round, and he's going to make money. He's made the cut. He's walking by himself, no caddy, with only his driver in his hand and a bag of balls. Yeah. And he's like, I got to figure something out, man. He's like, I got to figure something out, dude. I'm like, hey, man, put your work in, bro. And but be a better example for kids. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay. So Manny Mean for this week is we're going to do Fabian Gomez. He was plus 19. He and Jimmy both were plus 19 for the tournament.
Okay.
Jimmy went plus 9 on Sunday, and Fabian went plus 8 on Sunday. That's why they're both at the bottom.
Sure. You said they were both plus 19
for the tournament.
For the tournament, but almost half right. those strokes came on Sunday. Sunday yep. pressure, baby. Yep. Diamonds, pressure, pipes. Mm-hmm. You know what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you figured out. Yeah. For his efforts, they both won $22,316.
Okay.
Fabian Gomez is 5 foot eight, 163 pounds. He's 42 years old.
Oh,
Murray wow. got two kids. He's from Chaco, Argentina. Okay. He went pro in 2002. Went to Korn Ferry first in 2007. He joined the PGA Tour in 2011. All right, here we go, guys. He has two PGA wins, the 2015 St. Jude and the 2016 Sony Open, where he beat Brent Snedeker in the playoff.
Okay.
He has one second place, one third place, 10 top tens.
Ooh.
All right. So two wins, one second, one third, 10 top tens. Out of 211 events, he's made 112 cuts. What is Fabian's career earnings?
Burned one last week. So you can choose whether you want to go with you.
When I want to go first. I'll go first. So it doesn't seem like I'm undercutting.
You can't undercut, you know, 700,000. Like I said,
that was tough last week. I don't know which one. I'm gonna put him LB. Man, I had the number like squarely on like 15. I'm gonna go a little bit above that and say 17.
Okay. I'm gonna go over that. I'm gonna say 23.5.
And that would be a big mistake on your part, Clark.
Oh,
6,768,000.
That's it?
Yes.
Wow. Oh.
Yes.
Are you serious?
That's his numbers. That's the numbers. Yes. That's what you talk to the golf. Talk to
with
PGA
two,
Tour.
With two wins and two how many wins. Second places?
One.
One, but 10 one top second tens.
Place, one third place, 10 top tens. Yeah, but those tens could all be 10th.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, but I was going off all those cuts made. I was like, oh, okay. He's but it must have been like half. Right at the bottom. Like, literally at the cut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, think about today. This weekend, he made $22,000. So,
that's true. That's true.
You do a bunch of those, that's not a whole lot of money.
That's not a whole lot of money. Yeah.
right. I mean, career wise, if you add up his Korn Ferry winnings and everything, he came to 8.
Oh, okay.
Dang.
Wow.
Yeah, but his PGA alone is 6.7. So a little bit about him. He got into the game. He was actually a caddy at 8 years old. He started caddying, and that's how he got into the game. Yeah. Tiger and the legendary Argentine soccer player Diego Maradona are his heroes.
Okay.
And that's it.
Okay.
That's it for that.
There you go. All right.
But before y'all leave the U.S. Open, I missed a lot of this, especially Sunday. When I got home, it was I had missed all the carnage. I think we were texting. I'm like, what happened? What? Because I thought Brooks was gonna walk him down. When I saw Brooks was up there, I'm like, oh, here we go.
Yeah.
And then I get home and turn the TV. I'm like, what happened? Everybody was gone.
You bring up a good point because this is I don't know exactly how many tournaments or majors in a row, but this has been the recent track with Brooks where he's there heading to the final round, and then he doesn't quite close things out.
Well, the last
we
one,
know
he
had the whole
knee
situation.
Place.
We know he has the whole knee situation, but who didn't think he was going to chase Phil there? I just figured, either Phil was going to,
implode.
Or Brooks would take, but he didn't. And this has kind of been the trend lately. And it's so funny because I was trying to remember, was it Golf Channel or maybe it was the Tony Kornheiser show, Steve Sands was talking. I can't remember who it was, but they were talking about how you find these golfers and it just highlights how great Tiger was and these guys who dominate where they get their moment. You know what I mean? Where Rory had his moment, Jordan had his moment where he was hot and you get these guys. And it also makes what DJ does so great is the fact that he's been, winning every year on tour since he's been at least once he's been on tour. That for Tiger to win that consistently over that long period of time, Rory got his burst. Jordan Spieth got his burst. Justin Thomas got his burst. And then they'll find other little tournaments to win. But the domination over a long period of time, good night. That's not anything to kind of,
Yeah. The one thing I do like, I will say about Brooks, one thing I do like about him is when he said, I'm here for the majors. And whether he wins or not, he is always, he's probably 80-70% of the time, he is in the mix for those majors. Even though he didn't win, when Phil won the other day, last month, but he came in second, didn't he? I mean, he came in second place. Mm-hmm. I mean, so he was there. I mean, this U.S. Open, he made his run. He was there for a little while and whatever. Yeah. Again, I didn't see what happened, but he fell back. But he wasn't even, I think going into Sunday, he wasn't even considered to be part of the mix. But he worked his way up in there for a while, and then whatever happened. So I give him credit for that, because most guys on the tour won't say what Brooks said, where I'm here for the majors and the rest of you guys are clowns.
Right.
Actually, in my opinion, he backs it up, because on Sundays in majors, he's normally around the top five.
He comes prepared.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. Yeah.
He says that. Most of those guys wouldn't say that. And most of those guys would not snub their girlfriend of a kiss in national television as she reaches towards him and he turns his face.
He's like, I got work to do.
And she's visibly disturbed by this and doesn't know how to react. And so she goes for it again, and he does it again. And then she just turns her head and walks faster up the track to get inside to watch him play. Most guys wouldn't do that either, but he's not like most men.
Nope.
as we have seen. Vern, you got something there.
Just last thing.
Move around.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you good. I was listening to everything you guys were saying. So the last thing, as I was reading this, doing research on the fly, to going back to the Torrey Pines thing for the last time, to Glenn's point. So pulling this from Golf Digest here, the latest article, where they talk about 18 things they took away. Number 11. So apparently he wasn't the only one with this take. So I'm just going to segment we call reading. I'm just going to read. Torrey Pines took quite a beating this week. The wonkier corners of golf Twitter were dominated by debate over Torrey's worthiness as a U.S. Open course. We see both sides. On one hand, Torrey did not benefit from falling directly after Kiawah Island's ocean course, with all of those visually distinct holes and intriguing designs or whatever. It's uncanny how many holes on Torrey are just long and straight, with bunkers on both sides of the fairway, landing area, and the green. And apart from number 3 and 18, there aren't really holes that are visually distinct or recognizable. But then there's some more. I'll skip it. But basically, he concludes with two things can be true at once. He said, Torrey is not a bucket list golf course, and it served its purpose, as the U.S. Open host venue. Phil Mickelson, who's not been shy about ripping the USGA in years past, had this to say: I'm very surprised in that in the 30 years I've played the U.S. Open, this is the best I've seen. I thought they did a remarkable job, and I'm really proud and happy that it is here at Torrey. So I agree. That last part, I think, is kind of what we were getting at. It can be both at once. We can say it's like, it's not complete trash or whatever, but it did do its job as the U.S. Open host venue, even though it's not as visually distinct or whatever. That point isn't lost on me either, that it came right after the PGA Championship, which was beautiful Kiawah Island with the stunning views and, you know, all the carnage you get from there and the shot making you have to make. So, so I think that's fair.
All right. Yeah. I mean, it almost reminds me, I don't mean to even keep this alive, but it almost reminds me of the discussion about Northwest as a U.S. Open qualifier. Mm-hmm. Where we're just like, I mean, if you make the greens fast and grow the
mirror images in each other. It's like Northwest is a qualifier, and then Torrey Pines is the
basically right. They're trying to prep you for Torrey Pines. You at Northwest. All right. Meanwhile, before we get to our Pinehurst prep, Father's Day weekend, we had some rounds. We played Links of Chaladon. Yeah. And interestingly enough, Vern was bringing up the point that when we went down to Heritage Oaks, we were trying to find a comparison. What would I compare this to? I would compare it to a Lynx. I don't think it's as good as Links of Chaladon.
Right.
I would rank Links of Chaladon better than Heritage Oaks, but that's not a slight to Heritage Oaks. That's kind of a praise to Links of Chaladon.
It is.
You know what I mean? Anyone who wants to go back and hear about Heritage Oaks, how much fun we had and how, you know, we thought it was a great course, great condition. Go back to listen to that show. We recommend
Say that again. You said that Lynx was better than Heritage? Is that what you said?
I think so. I mean, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Obviously,
I look at Lynx and Chaladon.
Obviously,
like
it's not unanimous. It seems like.
I don't agree with that at all.
Oh, you like Heritage better?
Absolutely.
Yeah. But to Claude's original point, basically, before so we don't get lost on this, like they compare to each other. They compare favorably to each other. Even if you put Heritage, because when we got down there, you guys were like, what does this remind me of? And this was Chaladon was the first course that I thought of. But then really today, when I was putting some pictures up on Instagram, go check out our Instagram, GolfDMV on IG or GolfDMV podcast on IG. When I put the pictures up, I was like, this is kind of a Musket Ridge light.
Or Chaladon?
Yeah.
Okay.
Liked.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. A few of the whole some
JV, like a lot, JV, yeah,
JV. A lot of elevation change, but not because Muskie Ridge is, I think, is a tougher test. It's a bit of sure. a tougher mm-hmm. test.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And there's more holes of elevation change, but Chalon has quite a few. On the back, it kind of lets up a little bit, but through the mm-hmm. first maybe 12 holes. Not bad. So that's not, you know, so I agree. So it's kind of like Musket and then maybe Shout It On and then Heritage Oaks number three for me. I'm making hand gestures for people who are listening. But yeah, if I had to rank them, that's where I would go, like Musket, Shout It On and Heritage Oaks for three courses.
Because the whole thing, LB, is how do we compare Heritage Oaks to that's up this way?
Right.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know, but it ain't Shout It On in my opinion. I'm just saying, I thought Heritage was much nicer. I thought the layout was really nice. I thought it was in really good shape as well. Mm-hmm. The greens, I think, at Heritage were much more challenging than
that's fair.
Than Lynx.
Yeah, the greens were
so Lynx yeah, yeah, yeah. I just thought.
I'll put it this way.
Again, we all have our opinions.
I'm not outraged by. I mean, this is just me saying. I like Shout It On better. Well, I think it better, but I'm not outraged by anybody who thinks Heritage is better. You know what I mean? Right. Like, right. You're not going to be disappointed playing either one. Yeah.
Right.
Like, I would recommend Heritage and I recommend Shout It On, you know. But mm-hmm. and that's one thing about golf. Like, people, you know, you can play the same course, you know, with four people, and four people will give you a different opinion. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. About the layouts and what they like and what they don't. I mean, I play at Waverly, and it's like, oh, I think Waverly's one of the best courses in the area. Right. Someone say, oh, Waverly's not one of the best courses. You know, mm-hmm. so just, I guess, depends on what you like. But we played at Shout It On. Good condition, right? Good condition. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I had a good time, you know, which wasn't the case. Well, no, I had a good time at Maryland National. I just didn't like the score at the end. I played better. It was the first round with the new putter. First round with the new driver. And, you know, they both felt fine. They both felt good. The driver was, you know, there were a few holes where I did the same little slice left and, you know, had to search for it. But they were, I feel like they were, and I've got the scorecard, book that Vern got us or whatever. And so I was able to mark down how many fairways that I hit. You know, so I hit more fairways. I was putting a lot better. And I no longer want to quit golf anymore. Shout out 86, and I'm so happy about that. And I did break the curse of the Air Maxes.
Yes.
A funny text exchange. LB, I think you were on it.
Yeah,
going back and forth about the shoes. And I'm like, should I break them out tomorrow? Should I break the curse? I didn't want to. Vern agreed with me. He was like, you don't need that distraction. Yeah. You know, you just came off of Maryland National. You're real fragile right now. Don't wear the Air Maxes. Wear something that is not cursed. You know, and all the superstition. Glenn said, just shut up and wear the shoes, basically. I mean, you know, with a little more colorful language. And then, so I just decided, you know what? This is stupid. They're shoes. There's no superstition. They're not cursed. You know, you didn't shoot an 86 because of the shoe. I mean, a 106 of the shoes. You shot a 106 because you can't.
You couldn't hit the ball straight.
Because you kept topping the ball and hitting it 30 yards in front of you. So that's why you shot the 106. And so we're back on track with golf game. The shoes aren't cursed, and I feel like in a year and a half, 2 years, I can qualify for the U.S. Open. Vern, what did you think about the Lynx and Shout It On?
Lynx was great. I specifically chose it for Father's Day. You know, just so we have a fun round. Especially, I mean, it worked that we're going to Pinehurst, but just so we have a fun round. This is code for me just saying easier, just an easier time, basically. Like mm-hmm. And you know, it's weird that golfers, this sidetrack, it's weird that we do that for golfers, where if a course is easy, we try to mask it with things like we had fun and it was a good time and blah, blah, blah. Just say it was easy. It's fine for golf to be easy. It's okay. Mm-hmm. I do this. I'm mm-hmm. I punish, like, I'm like, oh, I don't want to say, you know, it was too easy. It's like, it's a markdown. No, it's not a markdown. It's not a mark against the course if it's easy. Mm-hmm. Who goes out and shoots a good round of golf and it's like, oh, that sucked. I hated that.
Right.
I wanted to lose more balls. So this was an easier round for us mm-hmm. to play coming into Pinehurst and for Father's Day weekend. We had a couple of fellas out who hadn't been out, or well, actually we had one out who hadn't been mm-hmm. out in a while. We had another one scheduled. Mm-hmm. He did not show up. It's okay.
Reggie and Rick hadn't been out in a while.
You know what? Yeah, we did have two. Yeah. We had two or mm-hmm. three. Two or three.
No, so, I had two. Y'all didn't. Yeah. I had two.
Well, we had one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who was our first time playing with them?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Our friend Kenneth from the mm-hmm. Baltimore Black Horse Golf Club joined us. Had a good time with him. You know, he was out there putting in the work or whatever. But Shallet almost great, great easy round. That's what you need coming in. Nice confidence booster, like you said. Claude beat me
which
by
I needed. Thank
you. Few strokes. Yeah, he did.
I needed a confidence booster that wasn't like Falls Road, where you know it's kind of a confidence booster. Even though Lynx, you know, you can feel that way, but for some reason it didn't register as a confidence booster. You know what I mean? Even though it serves that purpose.
Exactly. Because you play well, you're driving the ball well. So I had a good time.
I think any of the Montgomery County courses, other than Little Bennett, could be put in that same category as a confidence boost course. If you think about Needwood, you think about Laytonville, Falls Road, obviously.
So the second hardest course to MoCo, it must be Hampshire then, huh? That's really it. Yeah. That's as hard as, so it's Little Bennett, Hampshire. And then that's really, and then Hampshire, when they get the greens rolling fast, the greens are what's going to make it tough. So you're right. I agree. Yeah. You're 100% correct.
I want to go back to Little Bennett soon. Well, I remember Glenn said he doesn't want to ever go back to Little Bennett.
Really? He'll go back.
Yeah, he'll go back.
I kind of want to get back to Little Bennett because I did, I feel like the last two times we went there, I think I said like an 88 and 87 or 86, something like that.
Oh, at Bennett?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll definitely go back. We'll put that on the screen. I don't remember that.
How that saying go? He misremembered.
he misremembered what he said. Like, oh, Little Bennett. I was thinking about Little Kenilworth. My bad. I wrote the wrong course. LB. So Lynx, what did you think?
Yeah, it was fun. I enjoyed it as well. I was practicing. I was basically preparing for Pinehurst. So I did not take I didn't hit my driver at all the entire day. I hit 3 wood off every tee, just trying to find fairways because I think that's going to be a premium for us at Pinehurst. Mm-hmm. So that's what I tried to do. And I too shot 86. My putter was still working well. I'm still putting really well. I was happy with it. And I went to the range. I got this morning and went to the range again. I think I hit my driver twice. Mm-hmm. Everything else I was hitting, just trying to dial that 3 wood in off the tee. And it's definitely much more reliable than my driver as far as finding fairways.
Right.
So that's my whole point right now is to get on the green in twos and threes and not fours and fives so I can three putt like a regular person at Pinehurst and still walk away with a bogey or double at worst. That's my goal. So we'll see. Because everybody says you're going to three putt. You know?
But listen, so this trip is supposed we're going to have fun and play golf. But why is your tone like, I just want to, two putt?
No,
get out of there.
it's hard. Okay, so for me, it's hard for me if, like you were saying with Merlin National, it can be a great course. It can be as beautiful as it wants to be. But if I'm spraying the ball all over the place and not, and topping stuff and all that nonsense, I don't care how beautiful it is. It's not going to be fun.
Right.
If I come out of there shoot a 95, I'll be tickle pink, as they say.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. At Pinehurst? Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely, I'll take a 95 or 99 for that fact.
Okay. We'll see.
We will see.
I'm expecting 85s and 86s. I know, I'm watching videos on YouTube.
You watch? Okay, well,
I'm going to put Dag where you say
hopefully you're right and I'm wrong and I am giving it more credit than it deserves. Hopefully that is the situation. But I think we're going to get our ass handed to us personally.
Mm-hmm, not me.
That's just my opinion.
I'll mark this down, Claude.
Yeah, check the tape. Mark the time down on the tape.
Not me.
I think we're going to get our ass handed to us personally, but that's just me.
Are you looking forward to this trip at all?
Me? Yeah, I'm looking forward to going. I'm looking forward to the challenge of it. But I am cautiously.
Is it number two that's got you shook, or is it
seven, number two? Number
two and four. Just
seven.
Two,
okay. I'm not really. I mean, seven to me is going to be acclimation to the Pinehurst layout, to whatever it is. You know what I mean? I think number two is going to be when we're walking. Mm-hmm. That's new. We're gonna have caddies. That's new.
That's
gonna,
really what I don't want to do. I'd like playing bad with the caddy is really going to shake me. If I'm gonna play bad, I'd rather just play bad with nobody, with just us.
But to their point though, I think the caddy is definitely going to help us based on what Vernon experienced and I experienced in Jamaica. The caddy is going to hopefully will save us some strokes.
I would say the caddy's good for at least 5 strokes, Claude.
Hopefully, yes.
For real, for real.
Yeah, especially when it comes to putting.
So if especially I had a caddy, if I had a caddy at Maryland National, I would have shot a 101.
Hey, perhaps. They can't help you if you hit it out of bounds. They can do about that.
One thing I will say, our buddy Boss Golf, I've been reaching out to people who've been to Pinehurst, and our buddy Boss Golf did say, mm-hmm. I said, I just want to check one more time about these greens. And he went into a long response on IG, mm-hmm. but basically just said, look, whatever your caddy says, if the pin is front right, short, and he says to aim for the back left, do what he says. Mm-hmm. Not saying you might not execute, but he says, do it.
Do it, right.
Don't try to, I'll just lay it. Do what he says. Because you hit it mm-hmm. like they know exactly where to put the ball. Mm-hmm. Or if he tells you to put 7 feet away and just go with him. Trust him. And he said, yeah. the greens are, for all my trash talk, whatever, everyone has confirmed that those greens are,
mm-hmm. are devious.
Valid. Yeah, 100% legit. Yeah. But the reason, so I don't actually think I'm going to go out there and crush it. But they did say that the fairways, like, again, you can ground your club in those sandy things. Those ones are mm-hmm. tough. But the fairways are kind of long and baked out. So your drives are going to
roll out.
Yeah, they're going to go a little bit further. So.
Mm-hmm. And see, I have a hard time, and it's a mental thing for me, is when I am in sand, is hitting the ball first.
Yeah.
I have a hard time doing that because I normally hit behind the ball. For whatever reason, I get in this. I'm fine in the fairway if I can hit the ball first most of the right. time. But in the sand, I always hit behind the ball and it goes, if I need to go 100, it's going 50. Right. You know what
Don't
I mean?
Do that here.
It's one of them situations. So, so that's for me mentally, that's why I'm trying to stay in the fairway. Because
gotcha.
I know I have that Achilles over there in that sand.
Yep.
I'm hyped about going. I'm really looking forward to it. But I have no misconceptions about that. I'm going to go in there and shoot, 82. That just ain't happening. That don't happen here on a good day. So why would I think it's going to happen at Pinehurst?
That's a good point.
So,
yeah. Well, I hope you shoot great. But speaking of people who have been to Pinehurst on Twitter, Trey Wingo from ESPN, he's in Pinehurst now. So he said he's down there playing or whatever. And so I had liked it and responded saying, me and my fellows, are going down there later this week. Pinehurst Resorts liked the tweet and retweeted it. So I'm going to send them a copy of this show and, see what's up. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about what I mean. What's up?
You know what? Utmost respect for number two. I think it's going to be really tough and it's going to be great. I'm totally going to go down there, just super respectful. And I'm not talking trash about fighters number two. I'm sorry. Cut that part out.
But moving on, there was another Father's Day round at Waverly Woods.
It was, yeah.
Vern, Glenn, and I guess you guys had some folks joining you.
I'll keep this quick. So it's me, Glenn, our buddy Ronald. So it was one of Glenn's line brothers. And we got paired up with a young man named Mitch. Hopefully he's listening. Hopefully Mitch is listening. Mitchy Slick. I didn't call him that because I didn't know him that well. And I want to make it weird by putting my weird hip hop nicknames on people I haven't met. But it was a great round. We played right at 4 hours. Because it can be, weird. Mitch was really good. Mitch, we were like, hey, we're gonna play from these whites. He was like, yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and play from back here from these blues. And so I was like, okay. now this is the thing I love about golf more than anything. It's just dudes judging the bleep out of other dudes. Mm-hmm. It's like, so with somebody, because you all know, and anybody listening know, whenever you compare with somebody, oh, I'm gonna play from back here. When they go to that tee box, you're like, all right,
man. Better show up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Nope. Mitch took an iron out too on the first hole at Waverly Woods. Uh-huh. Sounds like a rifle shot. Just cracked up. And so immediately in your mind, you go, oh, okay, cool. He's good.
Exactly. I heard that sound before. Yep.
All that adjustment falls away. You're like, I have nothing to say to that dude. So he's dead center in the fairway. Really good golfer. Really cool dude. Ronald is getting better in terms of bringing more guys into the golf group or whatever. Our guy Ron, mm-hmm. he's 100% in. So you got somebody to sell your clubs to, LB. I'm sorry, Ron, no left-handers just yet.
No lefties. There was a potential lefty, but he decided he didn't want to play golf anymore, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he was out. He didn't want to do it. So, and then and Glenn's getting a lot better. He's, mm-hmm. like you said, he's playing much better, driving the ball better and stuff. So only a matter of time. I will say this: Mitch told us, if we can just fast forward to next year a little bit for Bannon,
mm-hmm.
we got to talk to him about Pine. He hadn't been to Pinehurst. I think he was from South Carolina, but he had played Tobacco Road. Said those are really nice mid pines, all that stuff. There was a difference when he was talking about South Carolina. And Tobacco Road and all that stuff. He was fun, great. When we said we're going to Bandon, he immediately was like, his eyes lit up. He's like, oh, you're going to love it. He said, as soon as you leave, you're going to plan your next trip. And everyone, but I'm only bringing this up because a lot of people have had this reaction.
I've heard that too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No one's ever said like, oh, yeah, it was cool. Yeah, it's cool. He was like, it was awesome. Go to the bowl, do the thing. And he went, I think I said like 4 or 5 years ago before Sheep's Ranch was even built. Okay. So much so that when he started talking, recanting, telling us about the memories and all the stuff when they went, he was like, man, I need to book another trip to Bandon. so he got me really excited for Bandon next year. For the round, Waverly, good shape. Like we always say, great course. Go play it. Round was good. We had an enjoyable time. So it was good.
Yeah. I had a chance to do an interview with Matt Janella. He's the travel guy with Golf Channel, the Fire Pit. He was talking about a conversation he was having with the guys out at Bandon and just some of the experiences and stuff that they created out there. And he was saying that he was saying like some of it just didn't make sense from a business standpoint to get people out. And what he was saying was that he didn't try to make these changes or improvements or renovations and things like that, or build the experience around getting people to come out once. He said it's to get people to come back. He said, because we're in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
And like, so no one's coming here if they're not a golfer, basically. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, but if golfers like what they experience here and they like, you know, they'll come back, even if it's next year or even if it's 2 years from now, if it's 3 years from now. So we want the repeat customer. And you get a group of four, group of eight out here, they'll tell everybody that they know that you have to go to Bandon. And you know, and so by this time next year, we'll be gearing up for that trip. And and we'll see. Rapid fire question about Pounders. I'll go LB, then I'll go Vern. LB, have you already started to pack yet?
I did something today I never do. Mm-hmm. I washed clothes today.
Aha, trying to get ready
to get my stuff out, because I was in my mind I'm figuring out, yeah, I probably wear this and that and that, da, 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 da. Yeah.
Vern, so, yes. Packed yet?
I've done nothing.
Okay. Now I'll go Vern. Vern, you say you've done nothing, but have you in your mind started to figure out what your outfits will be or your attires? Okay, so you already worked
that. Yeah, mentally we're putting that together. Yeah.
LB, how about yourself? Have you put that together yet?
Yeah. That's why I watched today, because some of the stuff I had wore over the weekend, I wanted to wash it to get it ready.
All new, everything brand new. I'm sorry.
Vern's just buying.
Yeah, I'm sure he's still going. He's gonna be on the first tee pulling tags off the back of the pants. So. Mm-hmm.
do, when we're down there, are you you're looking for merchandise or whatever? Are you buying something for the fam, Vern?
I will get something for the kids to bring back. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
LB.
No, absolutely not. I'm buying stuff for myself. Yeah. That's it. And I mean I could bring y'all, you know, I take that back. I'll probably get Rodney something. Yeah, I'll get Rodney something, because he's a golfer. What am I gonna bring my wife back from Pinehurst? You're right.
You know what I mean? I could go and I can get something for Manny, because he loves golf, he plays all the time. Yeah, but what I'm trying to do, I don't want to buy him anything to wear, because he'll grow out of it.
Yeah.
So at eight, I'm just gonna, I don't, you know, he'll get him a golf, logo ball.
Well, get him a golf towel to put on his bag, something that it will stay. You know what I mean? He can't really screw it up.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And you know, 8-year-olds can screw up a lot of stuff.
Yes.
So anyway, can't wait to get down to Pinehurst. We're going to have a good time. Even if the course beats us up, anybody hitting the range or playing a little bit before we head out? I mean, we only got Tuesday and Wednesday.
I plan to go. Well, tomorrow's going to be raining. Tomorrow being Tuesday, it's supposed to rain all morning and day or whatever. So if the weather is cooperative, then Wednesday morning I will get up early and go to the range one more time before we head out.
Yeah, same here. I'm gonna go to the range, see if I can get the driver just all the way back on track. Hopefully we get there with enough time though, so I can like hit a couple balls before we.
Yeah,
because for those who don't know, we're driving down Thursday and playing Thursday.
Right. We have a 12:30, 12:45. Yeah. Tea time on Thursday, so we have to leave at 5-ish, something like that.
4:30, somewhere in there. Old Dark 30. Yeah.
This is
a where what you gonna play in situation. I mean,
pretty much. Yeah.
Park. Mm-hmm. You know, and
yeah, I'm gonna change. I'll probably change shirts. That's about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Change my shirt. Yeah.
There you go.
I'm sorry. Well, how was your everybody? Father's Day was good. Everybody had a good Father's Day.
Yeah. Yeah, you see how much we care about. You see, you know, that's a great question, LB. You see how much we care about Father's Day and the family part. Mm. I just love Father's Day that all, a lot of dads are just like, cool, this is the day for me to just do me. And just
y'all
do
can
what
leave
I
me alone?
Do.
Yeah.
Not really a familial day, really.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's different because, you know, Mother's Day, there's a lot of pomp and circumstance. There's the pageantry of it all, that's you know what I mean? And for Father's Day, you know, dad just kind of want to go play golf with his buddies or watch television. He doesn't mind grilling. But he doesn't really want to do anything. He doesn't want to do a lot. You know what I mean?
I don't want to do a ton of hardcore parenting. Like yesterday, the best part was I played golf early in the morning at Waverly, came home, took a nap, watched some U.S. Open, did a little bit of stuff, gave him a bath, still did their homework. But then after that, Keisha was like, no, you can leave. You can go do whatever you want. I was like, cool. I just went downstairs and watched game seven. And it just felt, didn't have to do anything. I heard them running around. And I was like, look at that. Automatic.
and that's really what it is. And so I was talking to two things. I was talking to a colleague of mine, and she was saying if she could compare it to anything, she's like, Mother's Day is like Easter. You know, there's the dressing up, there's the eating out, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Mom wants you to go to church if it's Easter or Mother's Day, all this other
big
kind of
spend,
stuff.
Big
exactly.
Spend
a lot of spend. And she said Father's Day is like Flag Day. Everybody says it's a holiday, but we don't quite know how to celebrate it.
Right.
So you just say, "Hey, Happy Flag Day!" It's like, great, and that's it. Like we don't know what to do for it. And so I asked her. I said, "Well, what are you doing for your husband on Father's Day?" She said, "Well, he's going to sit down and watch television, and I'm going to cook the same day he does
every
day."
Yeah.
I was like, "Whoa!" Sounds like we're not happy in this.
Yeah.
All right. all right. Yeah, yeah. Not carrying his weight, is he? Okay.
So, quick story. So, I went to Cheltenham. My father's buried at the Veterans Cemetery, and I drove. Posted on our IG page. The Mustang that I drive used to be my father's. And as I was leaving Cheltenham, a Mustang was coming into Cheltenham. So it was older. It was a 68 Mustang. So I waved the guy down and we started talking. And his father, the Mustang he was driving used to be his father's car.
Wow.
And then it was kind of cool. So we exchanged stories and all that kind of stuff. So that was the highlight of the day for me.
That's a cool Father's Day moment right there.
It was really cool. And then he was, like I said, I had already, you know, paid my respect to my father and left. He was coming in to do the same thing in his father's old car. So that was pretty cool. Up. Yeah, it was pretty cool. Pretty cool moment.
That's awesome. Yeah. I was in a group text and I told my dad Happy Father's Day. same. Also carried. It was a real. It was a big moment for me.
Yeah. and on the way to Pinehurst, we're gonna talk about that too. Because I think you need therapy or something.
Okay.
Oh, and by the way, so going over some of the like just some of the listener data we get off DMV. So the top five states that listen to the show: Maryland is number one, Texas is number two.
Texas.
Yeah, Virginia's number three, DC, not technically a state, but that's number four, and California is number five, right? Now, the top countries, Ireland's number one.
Wow.
And the United States is number two. 64% of our listeners are in
Ireland. Ireland?
64%.
All right.
That's crazy.
Yes, 31% in the United States, then Australia, Canada, Germany. That's the top five. And so what I'm saying is if you're one of the 64% of people who listen to the show and you're in Ireland, email us.
Please email us.
Go to golfdmv.com. Go to contact us. Shoot us an email. And let's arrange a free trip to Ireland to play your fine golf courses. We'll bring our families and we'll have some fun. No, but just tell us, like, why do you listen to us?
Right.
Don't stop. I just want to know what's the appeal of you know, these dudes, you know, who are in and around the DC area that you listen to this golf show. I'd love to find out.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Texas and California too, man.
Yeah, Texas. I got guns, Texas.
Okay.
I fit right in with you people.
And on that note, we'll say goodbye, folks. We'll check in with you guys from Pinehurst.